You say Khair, Sayyidati, Sadati.
Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. نبدأ الآن الجلسة.
We shall start our session. We shall start our session related to licensing of information and content, the role of governments.
وسنتابع الحديث الذي تفضل.
So we shall continue with the topic that was raised by Mr. Musungo. I believe that you share my opinion by saying that this is a very important issue, since we are going to discuss the way how governments can create and tip a balance between the rights holders and the users, something that would guarantee the preserving of the rights holders on the one hand, and that would lead to have access to knowledge. We have amongst us a number of eminent panelists who have a long experience in this field. We will be listening to Mr. Hiu Osina. And I would like first to introduce all the speakers or the panelists. So we have Mr. Hiu Osina, head of IP at the EBU. Mrs. Marie-Françoise Marais, President, Haute Autorité pour la diffusion des œuvres et la protection des droits sur Internet, ADOPI, in Paris. Also, Mr. Massimo Travostino, Creative Commons, Studio Legale Pecoraro Travostino, and Mr. Thierry de Surmont, Vice President of the Directoire Société des Auteurs, Compositeurs, Éditeurs de Musique, or SACEM in Paris. So, like me, you are very excited to listen to such eminent experts in the field of licensing of information and content and the role of governments. We received instructions from the WIPO Secretariat before coming here that each speaker has 10 minutes only, so as to give the opportunity to participants here to interact with us and with the speakers particularly. I shall now give the floor to Mr. Hiu Osina. I give you the floor, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, of course, I'd like to thank WIPO for the kind invitation of the European Broadcasting Union to this forum. I think it's a very timely conference on licensing. But I'm afraid that I must first issue a warning. The warning is for those who did not pay sufficient attention yesterday to the intervention of the BBC, because it may be that in that case you will not understand everything what I will be telling you today. So if you have been sleeping yesterday, you will be punished now. Of course, I hope that everybody did listen intensely, so we could start from a very good basis, because I'd like to tell you that the BBC concerns you heard yesterday with respect to the licensing framework is actually shared among all public broadcasters in Europe. We have same or similar difficulties and the same needs for change. And that is the reason why the EBU last year commissioned a study by three external experts from France, Germany, and the UK, which you may have seen outside on the table, in order to come with concrete proposals to improve the licensing framework in the European Union. Just in case you don't have a French version, if you go to the EBU website, you will find it there as well. We call it the so-called EBU copyright white paper, but then our communication department decided that it should have a black cover. Not so printer-friendly, I would say, but it's there. I can, of course, not within my 10 minutes go through all the text of this paper. I want to just pick out one element which I think is interesting also beyond the European Union, and in fact can be, let's say, something to be discussed on a global level, and that is the so-called system of extended collective licensing. I'm afraid I couldn't be here this morning when you were talking on Often Works. I can freely assume that you have been discussing that element partly with respect to Often Works. But from the part of the EBU, I think this model which is known in the Nordic countries, is interesting because it goes beyond that particular element. Very shortly, I guess you know more or less how it works, the system. There is an agreement between a user on the one side and a collective organization on the other hand. And then if that organization is representative, according to the national law, for a certain category of works or other protected matter used in that particular country, then on the basis of a legal provision in the copyright law, and sometimes with approval of the Ministry of Culture, that agreement is then extended to right holders of the same category of works which are not represented by that collective organization. So by that system, you cover the so-called outsider effect. The agreement is, as we know from, let's say, labor law, is extended to the whole sector. Important element is that even with that effect, any right holder can at any time opt out from that agreement. So that's important to know because it's not a compulsory licensing system. It's not mandatory. It remains voluntary. The EBU thinks that since this model works quite well in the Nordic countries, it should actually be available in any European country. And I can imagine that, of course, you would ask, well, why do we think so? There are several reasons for it. You have heard from the BBC that the new media created not only, let's say, new technology to deliver material to the public, but also vice versa. The public nowadays expects broadcast material to be delivered in a different way to them as well. So it is the audience demand which certainly public service broadcasters have to meet in order to fulfill their requirements under the national laws. And that means that we need more flexibility within the licensing framework, and we think extended collective licensing is a very important element to introduce that flexibility. The other point is that, from our perspective, the Orphan Works issue is symptomatic for the difficulty, because it's much more fundamental issue involved. It is not only about not finding the right holder or not being able to to trace the origin of off-work material. It is about spending money for administration, which can be avoided. I mean, at the end, if you have many archive material which you cannot use, if you need to employ a huge number of staff for years in order to maybe achieving a part of the rights clearance which would be legally necessary, then there is a lot of money wasted which you cannot use for other creations. You cannot use it for other innovative material. You cannot use it for creators who need that money. And that's, of course, an important element. And as the BBC also mentioned yesterday, a huge example of this is their own archives which all public broadcasters have in Europe and which need to be cleared if they want to make this available via the new media, of course, mainly via the internet. BBC told you yesterday £17 million would be necessary in order to make that task complete, and that would be, as I said, I think a waste of money. Now, the other question is, of course, what makes the extended collective licensing model so attractive? I'll just give you five reasons. We have seen that the Nordic model exists already for 50 years, and it seems to work very well. So it's beneficial both for users and for right holders concerned. It is also important to realize that the extended collective licensing model is not a way of collectivizing copyright in general. It will only be used if there is a need for collective licensing, because you need an agreement. So if there is a need for a collective licensing agreement, only in that case can the extended collective licensing system apply. And it requires consensus between the parties concerned. So it is not an exceptional limitation. It means that the parties must agree on the conditions of use, which is also very important in copyright law, of course. As I said, one of the other elements is that the right owner can always opt out at any time. And if practice, we have seen that in the Nordic countries, this is only very seldom used. Another indication that it's obviously seen as beneficial by all parties concerned. And finally, I think a very important element of this system, it's future-proof because it is technologically neutral. It can apply to any sector, it can apply to any use, and it can apply to any kind of, let's say, new technology which is invented, of which we don't know today. And you may question, is this then only beneficial for broadcasters? I don't think so. I mean, if I take the examples which exist in the Danish law, those who do not cover broadcasting or media are, for example, educational use. There is a system for internal use in business enterprises. There is an extended collective licensing model for public libraries. There is one for visually and hearing impaired persons. And there is one for the reproduction of the works of art. So to me, it makes it clear that this is a system which is something we should look at for the future. And therefore, in the EBU white paper, the reason or one of the proposals, concrete proposals that was done is to introduce this model on the European level. I think that's more or less, in a nutshell, what I want to say. Finally, of course, but that's perhaps for the next panel, it may be also an item which WIPO would like to look at, for example, at the next conference. Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to thank Mr. Hiltusener for this intervention. And now, without further ado, I will call on Mrs. Marie-Françoise Marie, the President, the High Authority for Dissemination of Works and the Protection of Rights on Internet. Hadopian Paris, you have the floor.
Je vous remercie.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. It is a great honor for me to come here and stand before WIPO to introduce Hadopi. Many of you are familiar with it, because unfortunately or fortunately, much has been said about it. And to introduce this high independent authority, which sprang from a government need, which was quite determined, I have to engage in a quick background comment. We've immediately seen that there was inadequacy in the law for counterfeits to then talk about the importance of illicit downloading. And then here I'm speaking before our Argentinian professor. We know very well that young people, even very well brought up, do engage in activities which finally are misdemeanor kind of acts or offense acts, but they aren't perceived as such. And in front of this unfurling of illicit downloading, 3 years of firm imprisonment and 500,000 euros sentencing seem to be out of proportion. So we can have two solutions. First, a very timid solution was found in 2006 by giving birth to an obligation. The obligation to monitor their internet access. You are a subscriber. You have an internet access. Well, monitor it. See to it that it's only used for legal, licit purposes, but no sanctions. And indeed, obligation without sanctions, this obligation almost went unperceived, even for the judges. And I would like to state this here. Now, seeing this, of course, the government said, right, we have to act differently. And then it was the Olivan measure, which was supposed to have led to the Élysée agreements, where the President of the Republic and the government adopted a very firm position by saying, we have to do something. We have to find a solution. And to find this solution, we are going to set up what we call the gradual response, which became since then the gradual response or countermeasure. And so bit by bit, you have this obligation for monitoring, for surveillance, but it's going to be sanctioned. So the target of all this, the objective, was to be able, on the first hand, to be able to fight against illegal downloading so as to enable us to have the emergence of a legal supply, which was enticing, attractive, seductive, and enabled us to have a very easy access. Hence this twofold vocation. One, fight against piracy and the development of the legal supply or offer. So what better but to entrust this, is very French, I just want to say this, entrust this to administrative authority, which is independent. Because, of course, it's in our culture. The administrative authorities who are independent have acquired a certain importance in the past years. And this is how Hadopi was born. We needed more than 2.5 years to be able have the law voted on, and you're giving me a 10-minute presentation, so you see the difficulty of all this. Now, indeed, that is what I wanted to talk to you about. So this twofold mission, to fight against piracy and development of the legal offer or supply, you find that in the very structure of the administrative authority, because you have a commission, which is called the Commission for the Protection of Rights, and which is going to implement this whole process of a gradual response. And then besides that, you have a whole college which is going to give a reflection mission, an encouragement mission for the legal supply. And I take these 2 points. Having seen that the president of the college was elected, I would say the female president of the college was elected, was also president of this administration, this independent administration, which is Hadopi. And this is why I'm both president of Hadopi and president of the college in question. So let's speak a bit about this Commission for the Protection of Rights, gradual response. That's very easy. 3 recommendations. We say to one person, careful. We've just detected you. Your computer has served for the downloading of works in an illicit manner. And I'd just like to draw your attention to that. It's the subscriber who has cautioned, warned. We don't really say you downloaded. We say your computer is serving illegal purposes. So from my ear to yours, and I'm going to speak outside of the legal framework, it is quite obvious that often it's the same person, one and the same. It downloads, he or she downloads, and she knows that very well. It's her children. Mr. Professor, I'm looking at you. It's the children. And then we are going to set up this response, a first time, a recommendation, and if in the 6 months to come you continue, do it again, second recommendation, more severe, you're going to be sent a letter with acknowledgments of receipts, and if in a year's time you still understood it's happened again, and your computer is again used for illegal downloading purposes, well, you're told that you're going to be sent down before the judge. So it's really quite simple. It's the rights holders, they get the IP addresses, they gather them, they send them on to Hadopi. The Hadopi then addresses itself to the access providers, who then give us the identification of the person at that time, on that date, had this IP address. So we have this whole link, which enables this independent authority to send in a very clear manner these warnings. And I just want to say straight away that we are not the Commission for the Protection of Rights, even if it appears to you as being repressive, even if in the press people bandy about that it's inadmissible, that it's just repression pure and simple. No, its first vote is a pedagogical kind of vote, and it's the sending out of that first recommendation, which is extremely important, is to draw the attention of the user as to the importance that the rights of intellectual property have, whether it's in economic terms, social terms, cultural terms. And this vocation, this pedagogical vocation, is to make people responsible. The person who has a computer and who's using it and who has to understand that indeed there are limits in its use, in the use of materials that we have in our hands. So you see that straight away we are going to make the problem shift. You can't really say you're downloading illicitly because there is a legal offer, and you're going to give the person the information as to this legal offer. And there we understand that the whole success of the operation is tied to one thing, that is the quality of this legal offer. The quality, and I was going to say quantitative quality and qualitative quantity, and that contrary to what we are told, and unfortunately, perhaps I don't really agree with my neighbor to the right, but this legal offer, which is better in music than in cinema and films, well, currently we find that it is quite insufficient, that it's not sufficiently enticing or seductive, and that indeed it is not sufficiently easy to access. It's almost easier to go on Emule than to go on a platform which is quite legal. So this is why the college itself, it has been entrusted with another mission, which is the encouragement for the development of this offer. And I think that currently Hadopi has tools to do so. First of all, it can labelize or give a label to the offers which are put online, and it's going to build what we call, and it's a law that gives us this obligation, going to build a referencing platform. This referencing platform is currently being built, since we have a market which assists us in this work, and this will be made operational pretty soon. And then we have an observation analysis mission, because indeed we have to inform all the intermediaries, all the stakeholders. And to do so, we are thinking about the indicators which enable us to know who are the users, what is the use made, what are the possible responses to be provided, what are the repercussions as well of such and such and such position. And then, at the same time, we're carrying out a mission of reflection. And this, in everyone's interest, and that everyone understands that, the objective is to be able to achieve in-depth studies. And there Hadopi has just endowed itself with a whole workshop of five laboratories, economic, legal, philosophical, network laboratories, which are going to function under the aegis of an expert who's totally independent, but who works in a cooperative manner and quite open and cooperative. So I would like to say that Hadopi wishes to open itself up and turn towards the international element fully. We have a site. All this laboratory work will also be put on a site. The college as well will have an initiative, which is quite important about this study role. And online, those who wish to contribute, of course, they're quite welcome, called upon to do so. And, of course, internationally, we're present, and nothing will prevent people from the outside, from different countries, to come and cooperate, even within these laboratories. Now, I think that this cooperative way of working is going to be a way of seeking, not just in the evolution of technology solutions, which can be new, modern solutions, the emergence of other model businesses, why not? And then we're also envisaging the possibility, perhaps, of being able to support some projects, which could indeed come into play. So all of this with the purpose of protecting these copyright, these rights of the authors. This is a project of responsibility, freedom, because there's no freedom without rules. It's a response we are providing, which, in my opinion, is a truly adapted response because it's also open to dialogue. And, if you like, it has this twofold aspect. We're fighting against piracy. We're fighting so as to enable this legal offer to acquire all its value. So that is the response which the French government has tried to set up, which we are also setting in place. We're making it operational. We hope to be able to have it acquire a fully-fledged success in everyone's interest, stakeholders, authors, performers, artists, and consumers. Thank you. I've finished. Thank you very much, madam. Thank you for this intervention, which is quite exciting. I would like to take the floor, but I'll just stop myself from doing so right now, because we have a saying which says that if you wish to prevent someone from expressing himself or herself sincerely, well, make a diplomat out of him or a chairman. Consequently, I am reserving the right to intervene afterwards, once we have listened to the other speakers. And without further ado, I give the floor to Mr. Massimo Travostino, who is going to deal with the same topic. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nour Farhat. And thank you very much to WIPO and notably Mr. Professor Gary for this invitation to participate in this important meeting. And I will try to stay in the time given to me, trying to share a few issues that we deem important to think upon. I'm a lawyer, and I'm taking part into the working group of Creative Commons Italy, led by Professor Ricolfi. And we've been dealing many times with issues concerning governments want to regulate data and contents and the way how they should approach to the regulation of data and contents. So just to try to go to four main points. The first consideration we have to start from, it's an obvious consideration, is that knowledge and information is the asset for the 21st century, especially in the digital age, especially in the digital environment. Knowledge and information may foster creativity and innovation, may permit transparency into the role of government, promote civic and democratic participation. In one word, it's a condition for exercise of fundamental rights. So the first obvious consideration that we think upon when dealing with this issue is what should government do with this? First of all, governments have to make rules, laws, and try to make them to be respected. They have to survey the rules are respected by citizens. But which is the first condition in order that rules are respected? Is that citizens are informed. So first issue is information. I make a link with what Mr. Muzungu was saying before. Many times we are in front of contents, information, which we don't know the legal status, the nature of this information, of these contents, how they can be used, which is the copyright. Is there a copyright? Are they in the public domain? We don't know. Very often, even in public bodies' websites or international organizations' websites. So the first condition is let the people know the legal status, the nature of this information. I remember we are at WIPO, WIPO Copyright Treaty, WIPO Performance and Phonographs Treaty of 1996. They were dealing with right management information, notices that allow people to understand the copyright on information. Well, the same thing should be done for any kind of information, even public domain information. There are standard notices, legal notices, to be put on this kind of contents. This is very important. This is a thing that government should do. We have Creative Commons provide, for example, the public domain mark, which is a legal tool, a tag, that could be applied to contents and information which are in the public domain. So, first of all, let the people know. Second issue, which we believe it is important to share with you, governments should allow and try to exploit and use the contents which are in the public domain. So promotion and spreading of contents which are no more copyrighted and are no more under any kind of limitation, trade secrets, database rights, or so on. Contents which are in the public domain should be made known and made available to the public, to the people. And this is very crucial, especially in the digital age, when we come to digitization of contents and information, especially the digitization process funded by public money. In this case, in fact, we have two main dangers very often. First is that what is in the public domain through this digitization process suffers from limitations, contractual limitations, for example, which can be agreed by the government and the private companies which do the digitization process. Second, the creation of metadata, the creation of database rights, the creation of classification and collection data which could create new copyright on contents and information which are in the public domain. So we think that when this process of digitization is made by public funds, public entities should be very careful, very attentive, in order not to limit and restrict what is in the public domain yet. Third issue, public sector information. As you know, public bodies are producing an enormous amount of information, data, content, software, social, economic, agricultural, climate, information and data, which can be used by people, by citizens, by companies. You know that in Europe we have European Directive 2003/98, which requires member states to promote and enable reuse of public sector information, which is not under copyright of third parties, obviously. This is a very important issue. This is done, but should be done even more by each member state. The directive requires, if possible, the use of electronic means. The directive requires, and we go back to the first issue, the use as much as possible of standard licenses, just to prevent confusion between consumers. So I obviously refer to Creative Commons licenses, for example, or Creative Commons tools. But the very important thing is that people are put in the condition to know that such information can be used, and the conditions on which these informations can be used. On this subject, I just want to add a quick note on the proliferation of those licenses, especially governments very much, and there are good reasons maybe in some occasions to let them create their own license, their own branded license for spreading contents and information. We have a very recent example, brilliant example of the United Kingdom government of the open government license on public data. We have a similar license in Italy. The danger of these licenses, though, it is very important that they stay and remain interoperable with the other standard licenses. So the problem of the proliferation of licenses, the lack of interoperability between them, and the risk of confusion between people, between citizens, which are not copyright lawyers, which are not policymakers, which are not aware of all the risks and on the things to pay attention to in dealing with these issues. Last issue I wanted to share with you. More broader issue. Governments should and do take responsibility in regulating market of contents. I'm referring both to marketplace of contents and marketplace of access to contents, access providers and content providers. In the digital environment is crucial the rules which are put to regulate the market. The use, for example, of proprietary standards or proprietary formats to express contents. The conditions on which access to the network are made could and should be very, very carefully surveyed by governments in order to avoid anti-competitive, discriminatory practices by the operators in the marketplace. Thank you very much.
شكرا سيدي على هذه المداخلة. الآن.
Thank you very much for that presentation, and we shall go on to the last speaker. And the last presentation, we will hear from Mr. Thierry Desermont, who is Vice President of the Directoire, Authors Society, Composers and Music Editors, Paris, SACEM. Creators are private individuals, authors write or individual rights, and exploiting works of the mind are usually undertaken by the private sector. So we could think that the role of the government in this area could only be a limited role, a marginal one. But in reality, that would be not taking into account the economic importance of authors' rights and the role of copyright in the cultural sphere. Authors' rights and protected works today represent one of the fundamental aspects of today's society. So it is obvious that governments in the widest sense, including public authorities and international institutions such as the European Commission, and of course governments, cannot be disinterested in the economic importance, the exploitation of the works, and the means to exploit these works. So what can we ask the governments to do in this perspective? I think three things. First, governments have to provide effective protection for rights holders. Second, they have to help to streamline the issuing of use authorizations, licenses. And then, given what Madame Marais said, they have to promote legal supply. I'd like to explain why I think we need these three aspects. Effective protection.
has been important, especially over the past 10 years. Of course, digitization has been very fortunate for creators of works, and this has shown by experience. This is the biggest phenomenon in protected works, and fortunately, we have the WIPO Convention of 96. We hope that it will be signed and ratified by all states and transposed into legislation and developed by all states. But this is still theoretical protection, and that obviously is insufficient. And what we need to stress today are the mechanisms themselves that will provide effective protection of authors, of the rights they have received in a theoretical, abstract way. And I think that there are several paths to take to reach this end. First of all, the initiatives of the graduated response, the type that has been set up in France with Hadopi. I won't go into that because Madame Marais has spoken to you about that. Second, the second thing I think that we need to concern ourselves with is the status of access providers. Today, the legal non-liability, the lack of responsibility does not encourage them to involve themselves in fighting against illegal trade, whereas their involvement is absolutely necessary to have an effective struggle against piracy here. And then, is it normal that Web 2.0 platforms such as YouTube and others, is it normal that the exploiters of these systems that are analogous to online public services, people who are seeking to maximize their public, their audience, in order to maximize their receipts, who are competing with other media in seeking these receipts, while at the same time stating that they are not at all liable or responsible for using this content. And I think that we have a number of paths to take in this area and work to be done in the direction I indicated in order to provide more effective protection of the rights that are recognized on paper for rights holders. And here, I welcome the fact that the European Commission, in its Digital Agenda for Europe, has stated that by 2012, it will examine the need to set up a mechanism to protect intellectual property against continual violations that they suffer online. And I do hope that the future ACTA treaty that has been under negotiation for a long time will also represent significant progress. With respect to streamlining the issuing of exploitation licenses or authorizations, we have said that technical protection measures would mean an end to collective management. And I think that the time that has elapsed has shown that in reality, collective management of authors' rights has never been as indispensable as it is today to protect creators of works and to facilitate access to the users for the content they need to carry out their activities. You heard from the representative from EBU, the European Broadcasting Union, who said that we have to negotiate a system of extended collective licensing model throughout Europe. And for those who have delved into the document that the EBU has drawn up, EBU, in some cases, has asked for the establishment of compulsory extended collective licensing models. So I think that it is essential today for states to preserve and develop collective management of authors' rights. My first comment is that there are states where we do not have collective management societies today. It is regrettable that we do not have such organizations. And I think that states should assist in creating societies where they do not exist. And I am referring to the Gulf states. This area represents great economic growth and a strong exploitation rate. And there's SACEM and PRS involved there, but there is an absence of collective management societies, and we note that strongly. With respect to collective management organizations, I think that our political leaders have to adopt an approach that is somewhat different from the one they tend to put into effect. The fact that collective management societies are in a position of a natural monopoly, there are intermediaries between creators and users, and sometimes the political leaders think that these are ineffective, costly technostructures, and that people misuse their power vis-a-vis the rights holders and the users. And I don't think that's a correct view of affairs. It does not correspond to the exact picture of the reality of collective management organizations and the difficulties these bodies face. This morning, there was a striking example. I was listening to the speaker and looking at my computer monitor, and I read the following. The present system of copyright in Europe, communicated by the European community, the copyright system in Europe leaves too much of a role to the collecting societies. The European Commissioner in charge of new technologies, Nelly Kroes, announced last Friday at the Avignon Forum. The collecting societies, it is said, are against any type of reform. Well, frankly speaking, I do not know what would be the justification for such a statement. I don't want to engage in polemics with the European Commission, and obviously I could not let such a statement exist. Now, the legal supply, Madame Marais is entirely right. The legal supply has to develop so that we have a credible alternative to the illegal use. Much has to be done. Perhaps not enough has been done. We can discuss that point. But in any case, and I'll conclude with that, that there are three areas where states can effectively contribute to improving things. First, they have to verify that there is good distribution of the value provided by online services between the users, on the one hand, and the title holders, on the other hand, and then among the title holders. And I know that governments have started to discuss this. That's very important. There should also be favorable tax systems that enable the establishment of these regimes and services. The application of VAT systems concerning cultural goods should be made systematic. And a last point, I'd like to draw your attention to a French government initiative, a very recent initiative, just a few days a day. The states are to cover half of the price of musical works purchased by young people from The speaker corrects himself. He said 18 earlier. 12 to 25 years of age. The state will cover a share of the purchase cost of musical works online for young people from 12 to 25 years. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for this very interesting presentation. And if I could just make a very simple comment. I don't want to anticipate others' comments here, but we have benefited a great deal from these statements. We've heard about the role of governments in the legislative area, and also with respect to the judicial and executive aspects of the role of governments, the title holders should be protected, and at the same time, the governments should provide knowledge. All speakers have spoken about the need to protect title holders, rights owners. We have learned a great deal, and I'd like to throw open the floor for comments or questions.
Pardon.
Je voudrais poser une question.
I have a question that I would like to put to Madame Marie-Françoise Marais. There is something I don't understand with respect to Hadopi. Is it possible to know whether the work that is downloaded is in the public domain or whether it is a work with a Creative Commons license? And this work that is downloaded, with a Creative Commons license or not, I wonder whether the rights of the user are infringed in such a case. Well, the response I can give you here is that in reality, the title holders who have not given any authorization for the dissemination of works from sites that do not have any authorization come before us. Of course, obviously, these works are not in the public domain. There are authorizations or licenses that have not been given by the title holders, the rights holders, and the collective management organizations, the trade unions, the National Center of Cinematography, and the state prosecutor sometimes hear about these cases. So every time Hadopi realizes that such matters are being brought before bodies, it is a matter of a work that is not in the public domain because the rights owner is complaining that his rights have been infringed. And of course, Thierry, I think you can correct me, but I think this is the response that I could give to this question.
Oui, je peux peut-être.
Well, perhaps I can add to what has been said. The Authors Society works as follows. The creator, who is a member of such a society, confers his rights upon the society, and then it is the author society alone that is permitted to confer authorization. The rights owner no longer has that right. There are two types of countries. There are some countries where the collective management organizations have concluded agreements with the national representatives of Creative Commons. They have concluded agreements whereby the members have the possibility in some sectors to grant use licenses. And the Creative Commons agreements are valid. A work that is subject to authorization given under Creative Commons would be authorized for use on internet, and there could be no cause for complaint from a rights holder. Now, France, even though it has discussions with the French Creative Commons group, the Authors Society doesn't recognize this mechanism. A member, for example, of SSM could give an authorization under Creative Commons, but SSM deems that this is not valid, that the work is not being legally used, And there can be a complaint brought before Hadopi in such a case. Thank you. We have 15 minutes left for this segment, and we have many people asking for the floor. I hope that the questions will be clear and precise, and I do hope that the answers as well will be clear and precise. You have the floor.
A question from the International Federation of Library Associations. We wholeheartedly support Monsieur Desimond's call for governments to regulate the protection and interests of creators. What we didn't hear, other than perhaps tangentially from the gentleman from Creative Commons, was the counterbalance, namely protections for users of knowledge goods. Copyright law no longer regulates access to knowledge in a digital world. For schools, universities, and research institutes, it's irrelevant. Contract law regulates access to knowledge, and in a study from the British Library, over 90% of contracts offered to them actually undermined limitations and exceptions in UK law. Of course, contract law also regulates the relations between creators and industry. This problem, the overridability of limitations and exceptions in statute, has been foreseen by the Brazilian, Ecuadorian and Paraguayan draft treaty for the visually impaired. Article 7 reads, any contractual provisions contrary to the exception provided shall be null and void. Also, if memory serves me correctly, Francis Gurry in his exception speech here said that he thought this was one of the main issues. What should the interplay of contract law and copyright law be? So the question for the panel is, how do you think that WIPO should address the issue of the interplay of copyright law and contract law?
I wonder whether any of the panelists would like to respond? Or shall we keep the answers till the end, after we have all the questions?
Maybe I can say something about it. Actually, in just 10 minutes, it was not possible to address all the issues. This is one crucial issue. I addressed it tangentially, as gentlemen said. But what is very relevant, I just have to confirm the view of your view, which copyright, we know it, we know how it works, we all know the need for rules in order to enforce copyright, but it's not sufficiently enlightened the use and enforcement of public domain and the need to avoid that contractual limitations can harm and put away from the public domain what is no more protected by copyright. I'm not the person, most indicated person, in order to understand and to forecast how WIPO could address this important issue. I made just one proposal. We're talking about the right management information for copyright. One very important thing that it could be done by governments at least, or an international scale as well, is to make clear that exceptions and limitations are not derogable by contractual agreements, and to make clear what is or and what is not in the public domain.
And now we are going to hear the responses, then we'll take other questions.
Legitimate question, and it's an old one in copyright, of course. The difficulty is, I think, linked with the fact that legislation is slow. You cannot expect, if you look at limitations and exceptions, you cannot expect from a legislator to know at a certain point how things will develop 5 years or later. That means that any time that an exceptional limitation is dealt with, or at least put in legislation, probably the situation which it wanted to cover no longer exists at that time. And therefore, let's say the situation, the contract is actually the place where at that time you try to solve that as much as possible in agreement with each other. Of course, the difficulty there is that you may have different opinions of how this limitation exception should be interpreted. That isn't a problem of life which also exists in, let's say, in copyright as a whole, not specifically related to limitation exceptions, but also with respect to the extent of certain rights and the interrelationship with certain rights. So I'm not sure that we can solve it by that way. What the EBU has proposed, or at least is still a favor of, is to look at the possibility to introduce, as far as Europe is concerned, a so-called open fair use clause, as we know from the United States. Because this gives a possibility to at least make clear that if something new has come up, there is a possibility that if parties do not agree, it can be put before a court, and at least there is a third party involved who can decide whether the interpretation of one or the other is acceptable. Of course, it has its limitations in the sense that you'd be dependent on the infrastructure of the judicial system, but nevertheless, it opens up, it gives a certain possibility to have a bit more flexibility in the copyright law, which we think is necessary.
Yeah, I have a short question.
The next speaker, please.
To my French friends. A couple of things related to the three strike down, as we know, the French provision. And the question is whether there is in France any other instance of summary justice for protecting private rights. For example, could I ask your organization to shut down some internet service provider if they violate three times my privacy or they send me three times spam? That's one question. And then the last one is unfortunately, it's not a joke, but I would like to know whether Hadopi took any action when the UMP uploaded three times videos that breach copyright. The UMP is the party of the President Sarkozy. So have they been shut down of internet?
Well, the state records are not protected by copyright. Well, in passing, if you infringe your rights of privacy, your private life, Madame Marais will support you. You have the possibility of legal action because this would mean infringement of a right which is extremely important, the right to private life. And it seems to me that it would be before a legal body that you would present your case. I'm a judge, and it's as a magistrate that I am president of Hadopi, but I wear two hats. Hadopi is a body that is a regulatory body, an independent administrative regulatory body. And if you have a right that has been violated, I think that you have to go before the judge, or me, if you're in France, for example, and if the French law applies in such a case.
You have a different justice.
The copyright right holders can also, in see a judiciary instance or a judiciary body, legal body, particularly if we're involved in a case with counterfeit involving copyright. I don't want to speak under Thierry's monitoring, but I think that the ASSM could also inform the tribunal about the counterfeit, and I think that actions are always possible, legal actions are always possible, and could go on. Well, just to complement this information, says Thierry, that corresponds to the question, there is no tribunal, specialized tribunal in France or court in France to know about infringements of copyright. If you are copyright right holder, and you consider that your right was violated, then you have to go and see the ordinary tribunals or courts. There is no specialized legal institution to be informed of these questions. HADOPI, as Mrs. Marais explained, is something else altogether. It's not a jurisdiction. It's an administrative independent authority entrusted with a very specific mission. It's not a tribunal. So if there is a violation of a copyright, then you have to go and see a tribunal, and it's the tribunals that are competent to know about the usual habitual questions.
Thank you very much. Anyone who would like to take the floor? Yes, in the back, sir.
Excuse my French. Maybe there is a meaning of the word that I don't know. But is there a reason why the abbreviation of this body is made as ADOPI? Because the only word missing in the abbreviation seems to be droit.
Microphone, please, madam. High authority for the dissemination of works, HADO, and the protection of rights on internet. Indeed, what we call an almost acronym. We haven't included all the first letters into this acronym because an abbreviation. We thought aesthetically and when you listen to it, HADOPI was more revealing. It's just for that. High authority for the dissemination of works and the protection of rights on internet.
Thank you very much. We move to another speaker.
Усиление роли в современных условиях именно в киберпространстве роли авторско-правовых организаций.
Well, here we're talking about copyright. And here I would like to know what the situation is with the extended license issue. Could this be like a prototype for the protection of copyright on internet, and I want to talk about this form of extended licenses. The system of collective agreements is a system which has its virtues, its merits, and its limits. It's online use, as any other form of use is concerning this. The merits of the system is indeed to extend an extremely high amount of works and rights holders to give to them the scope of the agreement that was concluded by a more limited amount of rights holders, a system which enables us to cover very extensively, very broadly, the use of protected works. Now, the limit, and I think that was spelled out earlier on by the EBU representatives, is that the rights holders have the possibility of refusing that their works be included into the extension of the collective agreement which was concluded. And from that point of view, of course, if what the user wishes is to have access to the whole repertoire, the protected world repertoire or repertory, and guaranteed access to the whole of the world protected repertoire, this extended system can't ensure it, can't guarantee it. But here we're still talking about online use and other forms of use.
So we are done with, or we exceeded the time limit, but we would like to apologize to the Secretariat since there are two people who would like to take the floor. So please be concise and short. Sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is somehow general. Recently, the WikiLeaks organization, they released documents, war documents on Afghanistan and Iraq. Since we all know that the access to information and facts is the basic right of every citizen, irrespective of its political implications, I would ask the panel how they evaluate and for their comments, the looking at the IP and the copyright things and the release of such documents. In general, the governments are not very much reluctant to release such information, but it's the rights of the people to know about the facts. So I request the panel for their comments. Thank you.
Anyone who would like to comment?
Personally, I would just say that copyright issues are not involved in this kind of activity. I think that more state secret and issues are involved in it. So it's a balance of public interests, public rights, public of security of the state and the right for the people to know. But for me, it's very difficult to give a judgment of which kind of rights should prevail in this situation, actually. But, I mean, copyright is not involved.
Thank you very much. Other people would like to take the floor, but we have been requested by the Secretariat to stop here. So you may address your questions to the panelists after the end of this session. Once again, I would like to thank the panelists for their interventions, and I thank you also, dear participants, for your interaction. Thank you very much.